I'm Christian Scheller. Welcome to my podcast, an enthusiastic ramble through whatever has taken my interest the past week or so. Expect technology, games, history, travel, geekery, and as always, much, much more. Welcome to another Chinchilla Squeaks with me, Chris Chinchilla. This is an interview show. It's an interview with Saravana Kumar of Document 360, an enterprise-level documentation, support, and much, much more platform. Very much something in the ballpark of many of my listeners, I know. So before I get stuck in with that interview, let's have a few words from sponsors. I'm joined today by Saravana, who's the CEO of a company called Document 360. The name of the company might already give some insights into what it is exactly, but maybe kick off with a little bit of what Document 360 is.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chinchilla, for having me on the show. Just to give a brief about Document 360, it's a self-service knowledge-based platform. So it helps customers to produce knowledge base required. We got few different use cases. Mm-hmm. Typically, the customers use Document 360 to create a public-facing self-service knowledge base. It could be something like your FAQ articles or user guides or product documentation or software documentation, the various use cases for it. Mm-hmm. And that's the primary use case. And the secondary use case is that people use it like a more like an internal wiki as well. Mm-hmm. So not just a wiki, it's more like if you want to maintain your company's standard operating procedures or we, for example, we run our pretty much the entire business internally using Document 360. Okay. So all our sales collaterals and engineering documents, and then even our meetings got a standard format like we follow, and it's all documented within Document 360. So these are all, you know, a typical different use case what customers buy Document 360 for. Yeah,
that would make sense that you are dog fooding. That's good to hear. Why did you want to create this in the first place? Where had you come from? What problem had you been trying to solve that made you want to work on something new as opposed to, you know, trying to get one of the existing technologies to work for you?
Yeah, sure. I think there's a bit of a backstory. Uh-huh. The Document 360 is not the first product for us. Okay. So we are about 13 years old, the company now. Company was started back in 2010-11 period. So we have couple of other enterprise products on the Microsoft ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So one is called BizTalk 360, the other one is called Turbo 360. Mm-hmm. So we deal with some of the Microsoft server products and cost optimization solution for Azure, etc. So it's a very well-established business, and for those products, we have close to like 1,000 customers, mm-hmm. enterprise customers. That includes companies like Shell and IKEA and Mercedes and those kind of Fortune 100 companies. When you're dealing with large enterprises, it's very important to have a really good documentation of your product, because the products are complex and you require like a substantial knowledge base documentation to support your customers. And this is around 2017 period. We were struggling with our current knowledge base. We were using the knowledge base that comes out of a customer support product called Freshdesk. We still use the product, but we were using the module, that the knowledge base module that comes out of the customer support product as our knowledge base solution. And we reached a point where, you know, we had some, you know, 3 or 4 full-time document writers, technical writers writing content for the products. And we outgrown the capability of what comes out of this customer support product. So a lot of little things, like you need to have like some kind of authoring workflow. Yep. Somebody's writing content, somebody's reviewing content. If it's a public facing content, there may be some level of a marketing review as well. And if you're looking into localization, like you need to have like a support for localization. So the products that comes, actually, the customer support products is basically got a very small module when it comes to knowledge base and missing a lot of those enterprise capabilities. And we actually started, it's a typical story, right? You go to the market and try to find a solution in the market. And that's where I realized it's actually the market is divided into two extreme points. So the one side, you have knowledge base that comes out of the customer support products like Freshdesk, Zendesk, Intercom. There are like 600 other Zendesk products in the market. And the other extreme you go is where this all this extremely complicated, you know, component-based content management system. Yeah. And I felt, you know, you really don't need a nuclear bomb to kill a mosquito, basically, on the other side. Like, you know, your requirements are not that extreme. So I felt there's something that's missing in the middle where you want something much more easy to use and manage it on a daily basis, but you need also to have a power to do it on a daily basis. That's where I found a market segment. And I pulled, at that point, you know, we pulled the entire team, all the engineers for a 2-week hackathon. And this is the idea of what we have in mind. And we cracked it. And then we felt it can be done. And then we started the company. I still remember the date, 1st January 2018 is the first line of code.
2018, okay.
And then, today it's one of our fastest growing product in the company. We have about 1,400 customers. Some really big names like Yahoo, Netflix, and G2 and VMware, they all use our product now. So that's how the origin story of Document 360. Yeah.
And I mean, my background, I did actually come from a CMS background, so I know what you mean there. But then more recently, I've been working a lot more in the roll-it-yourself space, the kind of docs as code, as it's called, you know, stringing together all these tools yourself. But I understand there is definitely a space for SaaS products like Document 360. But I know there's always this point where people want to customize things to, for whatever reason, an integration, a layout, formatting, that kind of thing. How far can people take what you have and customize it? What options do you offer for that?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, since you come from a docs-like code approach, you know, that is another completely different
for sure,
segment.
For sure, right?
So I mentioned there's a one side to this one, and then the CCMS on the other side, and then
the
headless CMS on one side, and then there is a docs-like code on the other side.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, okay, if you have really good technical people, you know, somebody can stitch everything together, they're happy to jump on and, you know, fix all those things, and they can spin up the website and put a search on top of it and all those things, it's good. So I think my objective is, you know, we need to give the power and at the same time ease of use. So that's what my objective is. When you look at Document 360, you can use it as it is. Like if you today you want like to spin off a docs.companyxyz.com, that can be done in like a couple of hours and everything is done. You only focus on the content side and you don't need to worry about the hosting, the scalability, then all those things. In terms of customization, if you want, you can customize it in whatever way you want it. So we provide hooks to, you know, like change the look and feel of it completely. And then the domain name, we can either have docs.companyxyz.com or companyxyz.com/docs. Somebody preferred the different way. So you don't need to worry about any of those technical things. For example, you know, Midjourney is a company probably like some of your viewers might know. It's one of the top generative AI companies in the world. And their knowledge base is running on our platform.
Oh, is it? Like I was actually using that this afternoon. So there we go.
Okay, great. So if you've seen the docs.midjourney.com, it's actually running on Document 360. Okay. So it's on our servers, our platform. So that is like, you know, like 50 million hits per month.
Yeah.
Imagine
yeah.
like providing an infrastructure for that scale, right? And they pay whatever, you know, like, okay, they pay slightly higher than normal standard pricing what on our website, but still there's no headache for them.
Yeah.
They just publish their content. And worldwide, we maintain millisecond response times for their content.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think to answer your original question, you know, you can brand it, customize it, whatever way you want it. You know, like it's all comes as part of the product.
I've got to remind myself now. I literally was on their website earlier because I use it for generating thumbnails for the podcast.
Okay, nice.
So, you know, let's have a look. Oh, yeah. Okay. So I can see there is a reasonable amount of customization available. Yeah. Okay. And because I think one of the things you offer is this sort of, you know, you offer lots of inputs into the knowledge base. So not just the documentation, not just API reference, but also tickets, answering tickets and feedback and that kind of thing. Like, do all of these tools integrate? So if someone leaves feedback, I can create a ticket, and then from the ticket, I can create a documentation change, that kind of thing. I mean, I'm imagining that's how it looks, but just to be sure. Yeah.
Sure. The way I think those things work is, of course, you know, we don't want to build everything ourselves. Yeah. So we are focused on the really on the self-service knowledge base side of things. So we have features like called ticket deflector, because one of the main reason why I think in today's scenario, like, you know, your knowledge base is becoming more and more critical, because nobody wants to call the support, right? If there is a problem, you know, like the last thing anybody wants to do is, you know, call the support and send an email to the support saying, hey, I'm not able to get this done, because we all have strange experience with support. You know, you go and then you need to repeat the story again, and then gets forwarded to somebody, repeat the story again. And then you know, that is how it goes. Yeah. And people, you know, if there's a problem, you know, like even with, I was dealing with a case right now with Microsoft, you know, like, okay, you're a bit tired, you know, like, okay, you explained everything in a very long format.
Yeah.
And then it goes bumps on and on and on. And then, you know, like, but if there is an option, I would like to really go to the knowledge base, find a solution, and this is the problem, I fix it. So one of the key element why I brought up this point is, you know, like people want to deflect their tickets, and it's a value for both. The customers gets a better experience, and then on the company side, you reduce your support cost, and then you don't want to have like army of people sitting and supporting all the silly questions.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, that's where the ticket deflector comes in. And we also have our own AI engine. It can tell you, it based on the free form text, what you're typing, it will suggest you answers. And if it can't find it, we can deflect them. Finally, we can deflect them. Okay, raise a support ticket. And we hook up with all the products available in the market. You can raise a ticket to ServiceNow and Freshdesk and Salesforce and all those things, all connected, well connected together. Yeah.
Actually, that was kind of my next question. I can see you have these integrations list, 120 plus. I mean, the icons I can see are Teams, Slack, Zendesk, Intercom, etc. Do those integrations all kind of work as is possible, you know, as well? So I feel like the sort of the benefit that you add the most, and we'll come to the things you're putting on top of that in a minute, are that fact that everything's kind of in one place. So if I have an integration that is still not as integrated as it could be, it's not as useful, you know, are all equal.
I got your point. I think that is the, you know, like, okay, I'll take a Zendesk as an example, because for Zendesk, we got a very tight first party integration, because the use case here is people are generally happy with Zendesk as a customer support product. You know, it solves the problem, all the ticketing, chat and everything. But when it comes to the knowledge-based side of Zendesk, they are not happy. Because, you know, it's obvious, right? You know, like Zendesk is going to pour all their energy to optimizing their core business, which is the customer support, how efficient their email ticketing system is, or chat ticketing system is, all those things. But they are not happy. But at the same time, they're happy to live with that problem because they know, okay, you know, like 80% of what they're using is working well, and just because of the 20% they don't want to move. And that is a problem what we wanted to address with our integration. So Document 360 and Zendesk works very, very closely. You can actually replace Zendesk's knowledge base and then put the Document 360 knowledge base. So we have built multiple things, like, you know, they got something called federated search. So, you know, like, when an agent is replying to a ticket in Zendesk, it can actually hook up the content from Document 360 and it will work seamlessly.
Yeah.
And so in some cases, you really need the content inside the Zendesk ecosystem. For example, they got a lot of AI as well. For that AI to work, the Zendesk need to have access to the content. So we got something called two-way sync. Mm-hmm. Actually, they manage everything in Document 360, but everything is synced inside Zendesk. So you don't really miss anything on the Zendesk side, but you use the power of Document 360 for, you know, your content authoring and verification and all the benefits what you need on the content management side from Document 360.
And I can see you do actually offer a lot of sort of far more potentially complex and flexible integrations like Zapier, Make.com, Mixpanel, you know, all these tools that actually are pretty big tools in their own right and offer a lot of potentials, especially those things like Make.com and Zapier. You know, you can trigger all sorts of things from those.
You can do pretty much anything with those things. Yeah, you know, like,
Interesting. Okay. And obviously the whole knowledge base space has been somewhat, I mean, upset, given a new lease of life, depending on your perspective, by the recent wave of AI tools. And I think last time I looked at you, you didn't have anything, but now you do. And I think this is really one of those areas where these AI interactions with tools really are useful, this kind of personalized knowledge base. You know, something like ChatGPT is very helpful, but it's not localized to you. It's everybody's knowledge base. Whereas adding these tools on top of localized personal knowledge bases is actually super useful, because we all know that the biggest problem with any kind of knowledge system is not the knowledge, it's that no one can ever find anything. So let's, I think I saw you've called it Eddie. So tell me more about Eddie.
Yeah, sure. I think we invested heavily like everybody else in AI in the last 8 to 10 months, I will say. So we released it. We had a really big launch. In fact, we called it as a Document 360 2.0 because we just changed our direction completely, putting AI in the front. Because, you know, everybody does AI, but, you know, only certain industries and certain products are well suited for AI. Yeah. And clearly, knowledge base is one area where it is very well suited for AI capabilities. So what we have, for example, is something called Yedi. Like previously, when you go and do your customer got their knowledge base and our Yedi sits on top of their knowledge base. As you said, it's not a general ChatGPT. You can ask the internet, but you're asking questions again to your knowledge base, your data points. So you go to Yedi, and previously, let's take an example. Even in our case, like there is a feature called export to PDF. Mm-hmm. So you can actually, you know, pick a few articles and then say, I want to export it as a PDF format. So in the previous generation, like you'd have said, okay, how do I do this export to PDF? And the search result will come with a typical, these are the 5 articles, go and read yourself and then figure out, you know, like how do you make use of this feature? But if you go on today, if you're going to ask exactly same question, you know, how do I use a export to PDF? It will give you a precise answer, you know, this is how it is. You go to settings and you try these things and then check this once and then it will give you an output answer. So it's a much more, you know, like a very precise. In fact, what's happening is now our customer support team, whenever there is a customer ticket, they copy paste that question and then put it inside our knowledge base and then say, okay, this is the answer, and they give it back to the customers again. So now we are actually building a very tight integration. Actually, they can do it within the customer support product itself. But, you know, that is what's happening because it's very accurate. You know, like it will tell you exactly, like if your knowledge base is good, you know, like your content is good, you will get the precise answer what you want. And also as a platform, what we do is, you know, okay, ChatGPT can actually read any content and try to make sense out of it. But if you write it in a certain way, you know, if you write it in a structured way, the ChatGPT or the OpenAI can understand it, you'll get a much better result. Yeah. So we have tools inside Document 360 to suggest you, hey, you need to improve this content to, you know, get a better result on your AI. So we provide those kind of helper to the authors as well.
Yeah.
So it makes it even more precise when when you ask questions of the AI.
Yeah, I can see that. The AI writer, but also the meta description generator. And I think this is something, I think a platform like your own, you know, because you are a bit more prescriptive about how people can create things, you can sort of push people down the path of best practices. But in other tools, you know, when people can just kind of write what they want, of course, that structure is gone a bit. And
correct. Because even, you know, the table, when you're putting a table, it's better you put it in a certain way.
Yes,
then, you know, like
exactly.
It can understand. So as you said, you know, we can actually dictate before publishing, like a checklist, hey, you need to correct these 7 errors, you know, for your your article to be, you know, like working well with the AI.
Yeah.
That is on the one side. The other side, on the AI side, of course, we brought a lot of editorial functionalities, right? You know, grammatical changes, active passive voice, make it longer, make it shorter, to change the tone of my article to our corporate governance, and all those things. It's a massive area for us to invest in when it comes to AI.
I feel like I should ask I have a follow-up question to that, something you just said, but I just want to ask one more quickly around the tying things together. So, you know, actually these locally, let's call it locally trained AI tools are generally a bit more accurate with what they respond with. But is there an opportunity to even, you know, give feedback back to Eddie and say, I don't think that's right, Eddie. And to you know, as much as you have that integration elsewhere, can I also tell Eddie that they're wrong?
Yeah, sure. Because you can actually try it out. If you go to docs.document360.com, we enabled Eddie to it. And when you type a question, it gives an answer. And at the end of every answer, we ask, did it answer your question? Or do you want to give us feedback back? Then that is actually goes on a learning mode. Yeah. Like.
Oh, yeah, I could see. Yeah. Okay. And I just out of interest, I mean, maybe it's too early to tell for you. I had a conversation with someone else who'd set up one of these kind of AI interfaces to their content as well. And they told me how much it was costing them each month to run and saying, you know, whilst it's great and cool, we're not actually sure if it's worth it. So do you have any indications yet if the costs that you've had to invest and the costs of running are going to be worth it to you yet? Or is it too early to say?
No, definitely it's worth it. You know, it depends on how much value you can add, right? Like if, say, for example, it can cut down 40% of your support, right? That's a huge cost saving. Okay, if you look at it from, you know, just from a product and a technology perspective, maybe it may sound alarming. I don't think it's that expensive given, you know, like we haven't found it like, you know, it's very difficult to run it unless otherwise you have like a massive data set you are running your own GPUs and those kind of things. But otherwise, you know, the cost is reasonable. And as I said, you know, if you can relate it to what value you're getting out of it. And if it's actually reducing like, you know, like a three manpower, three people in our support, then, you know, that you can easily compensate. It's just not the cost. You know, as I mentioned before, the customer, if they can find the answer to their problem in like 2 minutes, that's much more valuable than their experience of fighting with your support for 2 days.
Yeah, true. So in addition to Eddie, I think last time I looked, you weren't on this whole 2.0. So what else have you added in 2.0?
Okay, the AI functionality is one major update of 2.0, but there is the entire product is actually revamped.
Yeah.
So as I said, the product was launched in January 2018. So it's almost 5 years. So what happens is when you're launching a product and then you're going very fast, right? Feature after feature, you're shipping into the product and the customer request comes from one side and you're just bombarding with too many features, bundling. And sometimes you really can't, you know, like you're not thinking too much. You just say, okay, let me add this feature, add this feature. And then it reached a point where we felt, oh, we need to take a step back. You know, like, okay, it's not, the user experience is not great.
Yeah.
People are not able to find this feature easily. Like it's just hidden somewhere deep inside. The configuration of the settings is really complicated. You know, you need to do 10 steps to configure this. So that is when actually we took a step back. We didn't add a lot of features, but we cleaned up everything.
Yeah, I can see that
make
for
it
sure.
Even more sleek and modern because our goal is, if you remember my very first statement, the goal is, we want to give the power, not compromising the usability and the user experience and make it seamless. So that is one of the major updates. The 2.0 is mere UI, UX enhancements and complete rewrite of the front end is what happened in 2.0.
Yeah, I can see that. I think I can see. I'm not sure if this was new or not when I last looked, but I can see you've now also added a lot more sort of formatting options in the documentation tools and that kind of thing.
Yeah, we even brought a brand new editor.
Yeah.
So we built our own editor. Because initially we were using some third-party editor components, right? But once we grow, this became our heart of the product. The editor became a heart of the product. So we didn't want to rely on some third party because sometimes there are bugs. Sometimes they're missing a core feature, what's essential for all of our customers. Yep. And it took us almost a year to build that editor from the ground up. But we, you know, but we thought, you know, okay, the product market fit is validated. We have thousands of thousand customers now. You know, it's we are going to be there forever. Yeah. So let's invest, and then that's also another big part of 2.0.
Fair enough. And okay, you've only just it's been one month since 2.0. If we spoke in 6 months' time, a year's time, 2.1. Probably not 3, but 2.1. What are you working on at the moment?
So we are adding more. There is a separate track of AI features. So the thing is, we do, since it's a SaaS product, you know, we don't have the versioning of 2.1, 2.2.
Yeah, for sure.
Every week there is a deployment happening. Yeah. You know, like, so there is one separate track of AI features. We are adding more and more. For example, we are bringing something called a business glossary generation. Okay. You know, like right now, people, they need to maintain the glossary like manually, right? Okay, what is CAC? Okay, it's a customer acquisition cost. And, but imagine there's a really good candidate for AI to generate, you know, you just say, hey, generate all the glossary out of my knowledge base. And it just nicely creates it. So just like one example. So we are adding a bunch of features on the AI front. And then, of course, there's a lot of customer requests, right? Like, you know, if you go to our feedback.document360.com, there are over 1,400 requests from our customers, you know, like, so now we are prioritizing it. And I just told the team, okay, let's do brutally anything that got over 100 votes.
Okay.
Just let's go and build it. Yeah. You know, that's, you know, like there are over 100 people need those features. You know, we don't even need to think too much. So we are addressing a lot of those things. And then when the platform gets bigger and bigger, you know, the scalability and performance and reliability, the tech debts all become crucial. You know, when you're smaller, it's fine. But, you know, when you grow larger, you need, how do you give that level of performance? You know, like, you know, that's why people, when they compare, you know, when people come and say, hey, somebody is giving at $100 per month, and why are you costing $500 per month? Because you don't see the real value. Like, you know, when you give a quality product at all these things adds up substantially, you know, like, so those are some of the things, you know, it's an ongoing exercise. It's a lot of people working on it. And we still got, you know, nearly 2 years worth of work. We don't even need to think, we just need to work.
I don't know what you mean. Yes. So I always like to give people an opportunity to something they can go and experiment with. You do have a free tier. It's a little limited, but it's probably enough to just experiment. And then, yes, you're right, the prices do ramp up quite quickly, but when you consider the cost you're saving, it's not astronomical. Yeah. And I did also notice that if you are listening or watching and you're people who think, well, we have a bit more of a need than the free tier, but we're not sure if it's quite worth it to us yet. You also have, I see, a startup program for 6 months free, which is pretty generous, actually, as well. And I also noticed that some of the things we've discussed are optional additions, like Eddy and the content suite. I'm guessing that's because, you know, the additional costs there and not everybody will need them, that kind of thing.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
For example, we have API documentation. Not everybody needs API documentation because sometimes you only need product knowledge base. When you have APIs, you need it. So we didn't feel fair to, you know, like bundle it and say, you know, you just pay for it. You can just buy it as an add-on. Yeah. A lot of things, you know, like certain things, you know, if you need it, you buy it. You know, otherwise, you don't need to pay for it. So the pricing is very flexible.
Yeah. And just one final question. I feel like, you know, you are in one of those spaces of tools where you provide quite a lot off the shelf. But, you know, I remember this when I used to work with CMS, that everyone always thinks that surely what I want to do is what everyone else wants to do. Why is this feature not available? Why does this feature not work the way I expect it to? What's kind of one of the strangest feature requests you've had? If you have one, maybe strangest you don't have one, feature. That's fine.
No, I'm sure, you know, we have plenty. You know, as I said, the feedback portal got 1,400, something like that. Yeah, I think sometimes people want everything in the product. You know, they wanted it to work according to their requirements. Yeah. they don't understand, you know, it's a common platform and, you know, like that's very specific to your needs, not general requirements. So we get quite a few of them. You know, for example, there is something called a homepage. Mm-hmm. So initially we had a single homepage. Yeah. You go to the knowledge base and you have a homepage. But we inside you have like, now we have options, like you can have something called workspaces. Yeah. For example, let's say you are writing documentation for Windows. So you need a workspace for Windows 10, workspace for Windows 11, and so on and so forth. So there's a request, okay, can we have a dedicated homepage for not just the initial homepage, but one per space. Yeah. So, you know, like, and localization, you know, like, yeah I think that now it doesn't, yeah. This is, I'm sure there's so many interesting features we would have got. And then, you know, like,
I can see that actually. I think you have some, do you have localization? I feel like I saw something around the AI.
So we have localization. Yeah. Yeah, I think localization. And in fact, localization, we have one of the AI features is also localization.
Yeah, for sure.
For example, you click a button and your entire knowledge base will translate into whatever language you want. And it's getting pretty accurate these days. You know?
It's always one of the problems with localization is that you translating things is relatively easy these days. Proving it's correct is a different problem.
But yeah, sometimes, you know, 80% is good enough or 90% is good enough. Yeah. You know, like maybe that love of the last 10%, you need to pay substantial money.
Yeah, true. Cool. Well, awesome. Thank you very much for your time. And yeah, if people are interested in taking a look, it's document360thenumbers.com. And thank you very much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on the show. Thank you.
And that was my interview with Saravana from Document 360. All right, then, what is news from me? I've released quite a lot of videos over the past week or so over on my YouTube channel. You can find something on Descript, which I use for editing my podcasts. You can also find the quite cool little video on a tool I discovered for removing duplicate audio plugins, a little bit niche, but if you understand the problem, you will love the tool. And also, I now have a video up on GitButler, a new Git tool that tries to enhance Git branching. I won't tell you anymore, just take a look at that video. I also have a blog post on my website and on Medium detailing a lot of my AV, my audio video setup, my hardware, software, process other things. So if that interests you, take a look. All of that can be found at christianchiller.com. I'll be back next week with a news show. So have a good time, everybody. Thank you very much for joining me and take care. I hope you enjoyed the show. Find out more about me at christianchiller.com, where you can find show notes, sign up for my newsletter, and find all of my writing, games, work, and video links. There's also details on how to get in touch with me. And if you want to get even closer to what I do, join my Discord server for behind-the-scenes discussions and helping me produce my shows and work.